Radio 212, complex.
DPS, go. Inco, go. PUS, go. Surgeon, go. Booster, go. Copy that, we have a go from you guys.
This is Talking Sound.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to the official beginning of Season 3 of Talking Sound. I am Chris Jordan, your host. With me tonight is Matthew McPeak, musician, asset manager, all kinds of stuff, man of many talents. And we are coming to you live from fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada, in the shadow of Treasure Island, right here in the Palazzo, is where we are. We're both here on a gig. We work a few gigs a year with each other. Love it. Always a great time hanging out. We just got done with the shift, and we are enjoying a beverage and just hanging out. And it was like, you know what? I think we should totally start off, because we sit back and geek out all the time on guitar tone and stuff like that. And I was like, you know, I wrote an article about this, a few articles about what we're going to talk about. Not just guitar tone, but pedal chain and stuff like that. Quite a while back for Rockstar Magazine in Austin. And I was a regular contributing writer every month, and I would post those. They're all posted on austinhotmods.com. Feel free to go check them out. It's a nice little tips and tricks section. And we'll talk about a few of those things. So we're going to be talking about guitar tone tonight. And we were actually just sitting here beforehand as we were getting ready, just kind of getting into mode. Listen to some David Gilmour live at Gdansk, both big Gilmour heads. Now, you yourself, we come from different generations, but it's interesting to me some of the musical influences he had. Tell us a little bit about where you are musically, where you came from, and recording and going to recording school, stuff like that.
Well, I started playing guitar like I think seventh grade or so.
Mm-hmm.
My mom had an old classical guitar up in the attic, so I started picking that thing. And so then I eventually got an electric guitar and fell in love with just messing around with pedals, really. I got the first package that I got came with a distortion pedal and a chorus. And
What were they?
It was they were both Dunlops.
Okay.
The guitar was an Ariana, I think it's.
Oh like yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah,
it was cool. And
Aria.
Aria, yeah, maybe.
Aria.
And then I ended up going to college studying guitar and studying music and audio recording, and started playing with a whole lot more people than the people that I was growing up with. And,
sure.
And that was just awesome, seeing everybody else's rigs and seeing how they set up stuff and seeing how they run their pedals. And
Yeah.
You know, and it was just cool seeing all the different, a lot of times you see the same pedals and you see different variations of them and stuff.
Yep.
So, yeah, it was really cool. And then, you know, when I started working with the company I'm with right now, and I was able to meet guys like you, and, you know, you ended up modding me a pedal, and I love it. And
it's one of my favorite mods. I believe you got the Crazy Diamond mod, which was they're both named after David Gilmour stuff. And I've also got I forget what the Gilmour mod name is, but I've got one for the vintage Russian Big Muff.
Okay.
For the Civil War Big Muff that he used back in the late 80s, early 90s.
That big silver one?
The big silver one that's got like the light green in the middle and stuff. Yeah, I mean, they're a monster of its sound. And that one, I really, really hesitated modding because I got it for $10 at a swap meet. There was a swap meet going on, and this dude had like this box of broken pedals, and I gave him my card. I was like, listen, I'm on my way to a gig. It's paying me cash. If you can hold these for me, I will be back to pick them up today. So I came back, picked them up. They were all non-functional from what he said, and I got them home, and I don't know what was wrong with homie's power supply or whatever, but that vintage Russian Big Muff that I bought for $10 broke and like turned right on and sang like a mug. And it was like, wow, I just got like, this is like Antiques Roadshow status fine, dude. Like I just got like a $350 vintage pedal like for $10.
Nice.
And I broke it all. Oh, it was beautiful, dude, to break it open because, you know, they basically used Russian military parts. It was a repair. The Sovtek factory was an old factory that built electronics for the Russian government. And when the wall fell and communism fell, the guy that ran the HX bought out Sovtek and started building stuff there. And they still had all this back stock of parts. So, like, the knobs in it are literally like what you would find on military grade machinery. Yeah. So it'll take like 100,000 turns before you hear any crackle, that kind of stuff. And when you open one up, it's just a thing of beauty. All the wires are like perfectly wound together and like bound with like fishing line.
Everything's real clean.
Oh, it's so beautiful. Like, it's literally just a work of art, just to look at on the inside, the way the circuit's arranged, the way the wires are run. It's beautiful, beautiful. And I really hesitated modding it. I was like, oh God, I just don't even want to jack this thing up somehow, you know? Like, yeah, even just like lift a trace accidentally and have to put a jumper in it, you know? It was a little fear. It was the first time in a long time that I was doing the first mod on something that I had a little fear in me.
I was just going to ask, was this one of the first mods that you did?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No, Austin Hot Mods had been around for a couple years by that point. And yeah, and I had a good habit of, it was a self-sustaining business. I would sell a pedal mod for $60. And then I would go out and buy two used pedals for $30 on Craigslist. Mm-hmm. And that gave me two new mods.
Right.
So after my initial investment in parts and the website and everything else, everything just kind of rolled right into itself. You know, like, money from doing pedals for people went to buy new pedals to do mods on, mm-hmm, to put on the website, to sell and buy new pedals. So it was great. It was great.
Totally.
And after many years, you know, it's a nice little business. It's doing its thing.
Make some money doing it.
Yeah, that I love doing. Like, right now I actively build for a company. Check them out, ladies and gentlemen. They are so incredibly awesome. Screaming Effects. Seth Wilkes is one of the best electronics engineers I've ever met. He has such a smooth design to his pedals, and the sound is so absolutely amazing. One of the only actual spring reverbs on the market that's a pedal.
With a real spring in it.
Utterly beautiful. They're all LED lit on the inside. He's got some patents pending on some stuff, but it's nice. I get to sit back and just play with pedals, you know, and like assemble pedals for someone else. It's like going onto somebody's boutique board. So it's pretty cool.
Do you have more fun putting together the pedals or putting together an array of pedals and playing with them?
I have more fun putting together an array of pedals. And that just comes from my home. Same thing with half of what I get off on what we do is the hooking up of the gear. It's the running the wires, man. It's like a Zen meditation to me. It became almost a mantra whenever we would go and set up a show and put up a rock and roll show, you know, like with me and my buddy Alan and stuff like that, or whenever I took my system out. The rolling of your cables and the spreading things out really becomes a mantra, and it becomes this like moment of Zen where it's like you're now making this space yours. You know,
you're like laying a boundary out.
Yeah. You know, you're moving tables aside and running them up against the wall and pushing the tables back and stuff like that. Just making it nice and clean. You know, my home studio is the same way. There's a little kerfuffle on the floor with some cables.
That's kerfuffle.
You know, but other than that, like, I just did a lot of work. I was telling Jer, our friend here on the job, and I think I showed you some pictures of the new rig at home, and it literally, like, I decided to move some synths over so that I could put three old school rack effects back into my rack because I missed using them. You know, they're all mono, but
what are they?
They are some old school Effectrons. It's an Effectron 1, which is really more of like a doubling effect, and then there's an Effectron 2 that has like the double. It's got a flange and then straight delay. And then I've got an Effectron 2 Junior, which actually goes up to 1024 on the delay. So I can get like a second or more, like a second, 125 basically, a second 25 of delay out of it. But the coolest thing about those is the electronic musician I am
is you can actually make them start auto-generating sounds. You can make them start like and start like bouncing off of each other and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. You can make some really wild sounds. And that's what we're here to talk about tonight, is tones and sounds. Now, when it comes to amplifiers, are you a tube or a solid state guy?
So the first amp I got, which I still have, it's giving me a lot of problems, is my Randall. It's a RG75. And I had that for, probably 5 or 6 years. And it had like 20 effects already built into the amp, but you could only use one of them at a time.
Yeah.
So when I got the amp, I was like,
oh, sweet. Yeah. You got all these effects.
Yeah. And,
shit.
And being like 15, I wasn't like, really dissecting the thing. So I was just like, yeah, cool. It's got 20 effects. I'm going to take this one.
Yep.
But besides not having that control of using different effects, It's a great amp. I still love it.
Yeah.
But like I said, those effects went out, and I've had to replace the input jack a couple times. But then I also have the Vox Valtronic, which is like half tube,
half
digital.
Yeah.
And that to me, it's like I got that.
Yeah, it's got a tube pre on the front end.
Yeah.
And then goes into a digital circuit for all the reverb and everything else.
And I really, when I got that, I was in school and I wanted to get a modeling amp because when I was there, we were always, covering all these different songs for projects. So I wanted to be able to get an amp that I knew I could be able to use in any situation.
Yeah.
So I got that, and I was playing in a band at a time where we had three guitar players, and both of them had a tube amp, and I was still working with that Randall. So I was like, I gotta be able to compete, not just volume wise, but just
everybody
being in a basement all the time.
No, it gets harsh. It gets harsh real quick. And as someone who, I was a singer songwriter. I did a lot of acoustic, a lot of home recording. But I really evolved much more, I think, as an engineer than a musician, much faster, and came to realize the reasoning. Because sure, I had an amp. But I had my amp and I had it plugged into a big ass speaker and I wanted it loud. And there's a difference between loud and good.
Right.
And that's one of my big complaints, like whenever I go out as an engineer, is that so many people mix so loud.
Right.
So loud. And it's like, you don't have to necessarily use that microphone on that amp for anything more than his monitor. Or the monitor on the other side of the stage, technically, in a 50-foot deep room. Like, if that amp can't carry this room with people in it, there's a problem. I really learned as an engineer to begin with how to do stripped-down audio. And I learned to do it, I guess, from my home recording rig. All I had was an analog 4-track. And the day I realized that I could use a mixer... and it's crazy because I go back and I listen to my 4-track recordings. I'm going through and putting a lot of stuff up on the Art of Christopher Jordan right now, a lot of my old music. And as I go through and listen to it, I can really hear, number one, my evolution as an artist and like my concept and my tightening of sound and my mixing. I can also hear my progression as an engineer, and one of those things like, I really want to just go out and buy a brand new 4-track because I still have all the tapes and literally like capture track by track and like really remaster it because I could make it sound decent. It wasn't horrible. It was just the gear that I had. Like I didn't know about like properly grounding my stuff in the beginning. I didn't know about like having a rack strip for power that was like a power filter. I didn't know about all that.
Mm.
So I have ground loops all over the place, things like that. So... But the day that I learned that I could plug like two synthesizers into a mixer and then have them go out to effect and have that come into another channel and that could all go onto one channel, the 4-track, it was like, oh snap, dude. Like this just got out of control. This is going to be crazy now. And I used that technique for years and years and years. And I still use it in my studio today. It drives my buddy Alan crazy whenever he's trying to mix my music, because there will be, I'm a commit to the mix guy. I know I want this reverb on these three synths. So I'm going to play the three synths right now. They're all triggered by the same keyboard and all doing the same thing and the same notes. So I'm going to fade them in and out on my mixer when I want them to come in, and they're all going to be on the same effect. And that's one track.
Right.
And that's how I record. Like, it's a very old school, you know, style of engineering, whenever you didn't have all the patch bays, whenever you didn't have that stuff.
You're just working with what you got, man.
Well, I could go the other route. That's just not how I am. That's not how I enjoy doing it. I've done it the other way whenever I've recorded other people and stuff like that. But that's not how I like to record my music. Like, I like to hear it all live. Now, as far as amplification, I have come into the realm of tube. I will admit the fact that most of my tone comes A, from my pickups, B, from my effects. I'm not a lead player. I do a lot of esoteric stuff and things like that, really weird, like, you know, playing with an Ebow and a slide and a volume swell pedal and stuff like that with delays. So I don't necessarily need, like, the bite whenever you go to get into a lead. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. Like, I could be happy on stage with a 35-watt solid-state amp, like, all day long. Most of the time when I'm on stage and I'm playing, it's going in straight through a tube pre on the back end of my pedal board, and I just give it to the sound guy. Right. And I'm like, give me some of my monitor. Because all my sound comes from that, right. And then I just go into a tube pre on the back end, and there's an XLR output, and it's done. Right. You know, that warms it up and gives it a tube feel and gets rid of some of the brittleness. But I've come into the realm of tube. I actually have a PV Valve King, and I love that thing. I love it. I've got the little 112, and I want to say it's 45 watts, something like that. Mm. I'm a big believer in the fact of you, unless you're playing a stadium, you don't need anything more than 50 watts.
Okay.
That's just me. You're going to be able to break up the way you want to break up. Like, 50 watts is a lot of juice, man. That's a lot of sound. You can get into hearing damage rapidly, especially in a basement. And it did, you know, like, what got me off on this Jag was talking about live sound and doing live sound. And it was frequent that it became a competition on stage between guitar players as to who was louder.
Right.
And it's at some point, it literally makes it to where I can't even do my job now.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even do my job as a sound guy. Because y'all are having a competition for sound on stage and who can be louder.
Dude, and it's even worse when you're playing in the band.
Yeah.
And the guys just don't understand. Like,
Yeah. Well, and...
turn down a little bit.
Well, and it really what it comes down to, because they're looking for that... they're looking for that ball to it, to give it a harsh term, to give it a, you know, colloquial term. They're looking for the balls whenever they go to lay into a solo. And one of the articles that I did that's on Austin Hot Mods, you can also find it on Rockstar Magazine online, was I did a whole series called What the Heck Is That? And it was like, a DI box, what the heck is that? You know, like, hey, if you're a DJ, this should be in your arsenal. Like, you will be immediately like, the sound guy will go like, all right. Yeah, have a good night, guy. You know, if you show up with an RCA jack and you're a DJ, I'm sorry. We're going to have some issues through the night. And it's really like, it's nothing again you. It's just one of those, like, really? You're going to bring that and you're not going to bring a DI box for me to plug into and balance that out properly to my sound system. You're going to bring me some prosumer stuff to plug into pro gear and not have the turnarounds. And for me, the article that I did was What the Heck Is That Thing, the gain knob. And so many people are afraid of the gain knob. and they think volume.
Right.
They think volume, but they don't understand that gain is where you get your tone.
Right. Right.
That the gain is what starts cooking the tubes, which is it's what's warming the tubes, which is provide which is what provides the harmonics of the tubing. So that's why, like, typically on a solid state amp, you don't have a gain stage. Mm. There's just volume.
Yeah.
You're just turning up a circuit. That's it. But on a tube amp, you've got gain and you've got volume. And the volume is your output. The gain is how much you're putting into the circuit. So what you actually want to do is turn that gain up to about 1 o'clock, turn your volume down to about 8 or 9.
Gain structure, yeah.
Yeah, and that cooks the tubes, that warms the tubes, that lets you get so much more out of your actual tone section on your amplifier. Because at that point, you're providing the harmonics that the tubes are supposed to provide. And most people have their volume crank, and then they turn the gain up, and it's like, and it's like, no, you got to reverse those. It's counterintuitive.
No.
It's counterintuitive, but it's an absolute truth with tube amplifiers. Like, you need to have the gain structure there in order to warm the things, in order to get things to sound right. Mm. And then you choke it off on the back end, you know. It's understanding headroom and gain structures, stuff like that. Where do you normally keep your gain at on your tube amp? Like,
probably right around like 60,
yeah.
67%.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, anywhere over 50, all the time.
I mean, now that I moved into an apartment, I don't really get to play as loud as I like to.
Yeah.
But, and then I also have a half stack, but I leave that at my buddy's house. Because he's got a basement that we can play in.
Yeah.
And so I leave that there, and that's really where I get to actually go.
And there's a use for a half stack. There's, and that's really
especially
where...
Especially when you get it for free.
Well, yeah, I'd take a half stack. I'd find room for a half stack for free. Mm-hmm. but, you know, really it comes down to, like, what you're trying to do as to what kind of amplifier you play.
Right.
If you're trying to get that certain... overdriven, hard, heavy metal tone, yeah, you need a half stack and a big head,
right.
You know,
right.
Because you need to be able to crank the gain and be able to get tons of flow going into there, you know, and as opposed to if you're out playing a typical gig, rock and roll, what have you, you don't necessarily need that, you know, you could use a 50-watt amp and sound clean and good all day long, and like a prime example, I love you, Anthony Pearson. I do. My old guitarist from my old Grateful Dead band was like, I just can't get the sound that I'm trying to get. It just doesn't bite whenever I'm trying to get into it.
Mm-hmm.
And he bought this beautiful, beautiful vintage late 60s amplifier. It was a Jazzmaster. And it's like, well, here's your problem. This is just for jazz, bro. They ain't looking for bite. They're looking for loud and clean.
Right.
So all you got's a volume. You don't have a gain.
Right.
You know, even though it was a tube amp, like, it was straight in with the impedance and straight out. So you're not going to get that bite whenever you go to lay into something and whenever you turn up your volume a little bit. You know,
right.
you're not going to hit that. And so many people are looking for that, and it escapes them. And they don't understand, you know, number one, gain structure, things like that. So that's a big, important part of finding your tone. Would you say that you've found your tone?
I don't think I found it yet.
Yeah?
There's been times where I was like, yeah, that's definitely it. But, like, when I have two PV speakers. It's a 10 and a 12. And I used to run my Randall through those two, so it was like I'm playing a half stack, but it's really split. And I loved that combo.
Yeah.
But I kind of outgrew that, and then even being at school, like being in the studio, just like I was saying, playing so many different types of music, you'd think that, you know, maybe you'd pick up some other stuff here and there, and I was still kind of like, I'm still not. You know, you're never like 100% with
what you got. You know, you're always looking for something else.
Yeah. And it's tough because, I mean, as someone who does the electronic music I do, I'm always looking for new sounds.
Right.
Like,
I'm so excited to get these pedals from you.
Yeah.
Having a tremolo pedal, I've never had one of those before, so that's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see what you do with my wah.
It's going to be fun.
Yes, it is going to be fun.
And let's start getting into pedals because, for me, pedals are what made playing guitar for me. I will admit it. I guess the only way it could be put is, pardon the language, folks, pardon the idiom, I am a gear whore. I collect gear. And at one point I had a live sound company, so I had a couple different rigs depending on what I was doing and stuff like that. They were pre-built because I didn't like unracking stuff and building another rack. If I'm working this size venue, this is what I'm bringing.
Right.
If I'm doing this system, this is what I'm bringing. So, I ended up with a crap ton of gear. Plus, I had my home studio. I've got like a full-on commander console with like, 12 rack units on each side, all full, and some stuff down on the bottom, and some other rack effects out in the garage, that are like backups. Like, I just sold my buddy an entire like 10-space rack full of stuff, like preamps and everything else, like digital recorder, like everything. And he was like, you sure you can get rid of all this? I'm like, dude, that's literally the backup for my backup. Like, I don't think I need the backup for my backup anymore. I'm not doing live gigs with my huge sound system. But for me, the pedals and effects were always what I loved. Mm-hmm. It's what drove my electronic music, playing around with that stuff and really crafting soundscapes with it. Like I said, bouncing delays off delays to get a predictable third delay, that kind of stuff is what I really got into. Now, what kind of pedals do you use on your rig? Because, I mean, number one, tell everybody what kind of music you play most of the time. Because that makes a big difference.
I mean, I play metal. I play, but I also love playing clean, just bluesy stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't really like set it to one and play it like that for, that's not that. I like to mix it up a little bit. But I have the overdrive that I had, that you modded.
Yeah, that's the blues driver.
I have a red repeat delay.
Okay.
My reverb is a Yant. It was a Japanese made one. I don't know, I just got it and I like it. So I don't think so. I really don't even know what it's called. Then what else do I have?
And is this your actual chain?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not in order.
Okay.
No. Then I have the MXR 10 band EQ.
Okay.
Key
to have an EQ in line, I believe.
I have the MXR analog chorus.
Okay.
Then I had that Morley Wah that you're working on for me. And then I used to have the MXR overdriver, but then I got rid of that when I got the
blues drive.
Yeah. And
nice. I like to hear that one of my modded pedals let you drop another one.
Yeah.
Let you save some board space because that just ain't doing it anymore.
And soon to be the tremolo.
The tremolo. Now, another article that I wrote that was a reader question was what order should pedals go in? And some people have a strict order. I personally don't. I don't have a strict order that my pedals go in. For me, it depends on what I'm doing. I've got different pedal boards built for different stuff because, like I said, with Austin Hot, like I've literally got my same buddy. I recently just sold him like a pedal board full of pedals. He's like, here you go. He was like, I'm thinking about getting some pedals. I'm like, all right. I sent him a picture one day. He's like, oh, that's cool, man. Who'd you make that for? I'm like, well, you want to buy it? Like I literally just had like a Metal Zone kicking around and stuff like that. Like, Just all these pedals. I literally have like bins of pedals. It's wrong. It's a sickness. It's horrible. But
nothing wrong.
I normally start with my booster distortion.
Okay.
A lot of people start with their compressor. Like, do you use a compressor in line?
I don't.
You don't?
No.
Why not?
I just never had one. The effects in that Randall is comp and reverb.
Okay.
And like, there's a couple of them where it was like two effects, like flange.
Sure.
Reverb,
yeah. Yeah. Like,
reverb.
Sure.
And I don't know, for whatever reason, the comp and the reverb, I didn't like it. And
too squishy.
Yeah. I mean, I love it in the studio, but
yeah,
not just
not on that. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I found that I like a compressor. Personally, my compressor goes at the end of my chain. I start with my clean boost is first, followed by distortions. I've got a DS1.
So you have two different distortion pedals?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got a DS1 and a blues driver. And then after that comes my modulation.
Okay.
So I would have flanger, phaser, and then after that, I've got my regular delay, my Zoom choir. It's my baby. Oh my God, Zoom! If you ever see a Zoom choir for sale, just buy it. Just buy it, dude. Buy it. They are so rare to find. There were only a few of them released in the U.S. And oh my God, it is. I'm a huge fan of Zoom delays. They are one of the most like epic delays that you can get. Like Zoom rack delays and stuff will just give you delays that go on for days. It's freaking sick. And the dimension setting on that, that's like a delay reverb, is just so lush and amazing.
Yeah.
So I've got that first, followed by my DD3. That I've modded to have a high cut on it, so it's a little more analog.
What is the DD3?
The DD3 is an old school delay pedal,
okay.
Boss delay pedal. Most of my stuff on my rig is Boss. And I'm a big believer in stuff like that, because if you're on the road, things like that, I think you need to be able to go into your local pawn shop or your local guitar shop and be able to replace your pedal. So going with major name brands, your MXRs,
right.
Your things like that, that's what you're going to commonly find. I love a boutique sound. I love a boutique pedal. But so many times I saw a boutique pedal fail on a pedal board or something like that, and dude's got another 3 weeks on tour, and that's kind of part of his sound.
Oh, that sucks.
You know, and what do you do at that point? You know, you might hop into a Guitar Center and find it, but not every Guitar Center carries the same boutique stuff.
Right.
You know, because it just doesn't sell in their area. So, yeah, after my Zoom, I've got my DD3 with the high cut, so it's more analog, tape-worn sound. Not as high on the repeats. It starts to kind of wear down and get grittier toward the repeats.
And you put your delays after your flange and chorus.
Yeah, yeah. And then I've got my DD5, which is the upmark from that, because it's got a reverse delay on it.
Cool.
So that's literally just my dedicated reverse delay. It's either my reverse or I'll use it for a tap. It's also got a tap feature. And then after that, I've got my EQ pedal, my modded EQ pedal, the Boss GE7. And then after that, I've got a vintage DOD FX7, or FXB7. It's actually a bass compressor that I have modded. And, you know, I've always been a fan, because I don't like a lot of bright in my guitar sound. I like a little bit duller sound. You know, I don't like the harshness of digital repeats. I don't like the harshness of really bright strings. I tend to actually, whenever I get my strings, take a candle and wipe over them a couple times, and then wipe that off with a rag.
Really?
So it kind of gets inside the coils and kind of dulls them down a little bit.
Wow.
So it's like it's immediately like you've played them for like a week.
I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Pretty smart.
Yeah, it's interesting.
You're smart too.
Yeah, thank you. But yeah, it just kind of coats the string a little bit and keeps it from vibrating that too much to just get those high harmonics. I don't like the high harmonics. I like my stuff to sound a little bit more subdued. But back in the day, I was first a bass player, and I used guitar pedals for my bass because every time I used a bass pedal, it was like dark as hell. Like you couldn't hear the sound, and I was like, oh, I want to hear like this chorus. So I went out and I bought like a stereo guitar chorus for my bass. Mm-hmm. And it was like, ooh, listen to that. It's so bright. It's so vibrant. Like I can get so much more sound out of it.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because a couple months ago I was jamming with my friend that I was telling you about. I leave my half stack at his house.
Yeah.
And his friend was there, met him for the first time. He was a bass player, and he had a whole suitcase filled with pedals. And he was telling me all about him, and he was all about him, and I was like, "Where? This is going to be sweet. I can't wait to hear what this guy's got."
Yeah.
And it just sounded like a wall of
noise.
Yeah.
No, and that's...
And I didn't have the heart to tell him, like...
Mm. And that's what gets dangerous. That's what gets dangerous, because, you know, you really do have to learn what effects go well with what other effects. And as far as pedal chain goes in order, like, people freak out when they see my board and they see that I have a compressor last in chain. Because technically the compressor is supposed to be there to, like, kick the subtleties that you're doing up.
Right.
And what I wanted to do is accentuate the subtleties of my effects. Because my sound is my effects.
Right, right.
It's not my guitar playing. It's the effects that's the sound that I'm trying to... Yeah. And it really just kind of chokes things down and tightens it up like right there on the tail end and boosts what needs to be boosted and kills what needs to be killed. Mm-hmm. You know? So that's why I put my EQ and my compressor at the end.
Cool.
But as far as everything else, like I tell people, you know, should your distortion go before your modulation? It depends on if you want to distort your modulation or modulate your distortion.
Right.
If you want to modulate your distortion, you know, by putting a flanger after your distortion, then that's where you put it in chain.
Right.
If you like the sound of a distorted flange, then put your flange first. The two things sound different. So you really do have to kind of chemistry set with your stuff. You know, there's a lot of like theory behind all that stuff. I don't know. I'm a person that plays what sounds right in my head, you know, and I do the same thing with engineering. So for me, it's one of those like, what is the sound you're going for? You can put your wah first, you can put your wah last. Depends on if you like want to distort your wah or wah your distortion.
Right.
You know?
It's with flange particularly, I always found playing with flange when you have a lot of distortion.
Yeah.
It just does something that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not comfy.
Yeah, yeah. It can get very very crispy. Yeah. Very crispy as the high wave comes in, the shh.
Mm-hmm.
You have to learn to dial those things in to where it sounds right.
If you can. If you can.
You can, yeah. Yeah, if you can. And that's just it. It takes a lot of time to achieve the tone that you're looking for. I would say because I'm such a Gilmore freak, you know, I've got two different guitars that have the DG20s by EMG, and which are the David Gilmour series folks. They both have the Gilmour switch modded into it that I wired in. Most of my guitars nowadays are not off-the-shelf guitars. Like, I build them. I find the parts on Craigslist or whatever, and I'll spend like a couple $100 and, you know, just build the guitar in a day, you know.
Yeah, all the guitars I have, the electric guitars I have, none of them have stock pickups in them anymore.
Yeah.
Upgrades and everything. And that's the other thing that's so much fun is you get a new pickup put in and...
Yeah.
It just, you have this instrument you've been playing for years and all of a sudden it feels like a brand new instrument because it just...
It sounds totally different.
Yeah.
It sounds totally different.
And it plays different.
Yeah.
It feels different.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know... so much of the build of the instrument, so much of the build of the pedal, the build of the amplifier, all of that goes into it. All of that goes into the sound. And really, when it comes to finding your sound, it's what you feel is right. And that's what all of my articles have ended in. You know, like there is no tried and true method. There is none.
And really,
the rules are technically written by you.
Your tone is going to change.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Over time, it's going to evolve into something and you never know. Like, you could hear something on the radio or something and just fall in love with that particular sound and want to throw that into your...
Well, and as you grow, your musical tastes change. You know, you start learning different styles, stuff like that. So... Yeah, you know, with the different styles, the tonal quality of what you're doing in and of itself changes. So, you know, like, if you're going to play a classical piece, sure, you could use a compressor, you could use a preamp, you could use a boost pedal, all that kind of stuff. You could even use a flanger, but I don't know if you'd be rocking some distortion. You know, Moonlight Sonata with a sweet slow phase on it would actually sound pretty cool on a classical.
Dude, Beethoven with metal and Beethoven to me are like,
oh, they're interchangeable.
Yeah,
they're interchangeable.
He's the OG of metal.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean all metal did was take classical scales and modes and like up tempo them by three.
And just the power of. Like the power of a Wagner piece.
Yeah,
that shit, I'm sure was.
Oh, it wasn't until later in life. I mean, it blows people's minds that, number one, I moved to Austin, Texas, and I basically, at this point, am nothing but a corporate AV guy, and I love it. Like, they're like, dude, you used to be nothing but rock and roll. And I'm like, yeah, but now I just work with a different ilk of drunks. Like, they don't start fights and stuff where I work anymore. You know, I don't have to deal with the drunk guy coming in at 3 a.m. when we're trying to close up, like, oh man, I left my battle port, bro. Of course you did. It's right there. I tried to tell you three times before you left. You said you knew, bro.
You lied.
You lied, quite obviously. So, yeah, you know, and it's when it comes to finding your tone, it's literally about finding what works for you. And as you grow, your taste will grow. As you grow, your desire for different sounds will grow. You know, I've never been a humbucker guy until probably the last 4 years, where I've started to really appreciate a humbucker and the tone and sound of it.
Okay.
I'm a single coil fanatic. I love the concept of single coil. If you want something out of phase, take that middle pickup and flip it 180 and put it back in, and your pickups will now be out of phase, and you'll have a humbucker feel to a single coil guitar.
Jeez, it's that simple.
It is.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. So, on that note, folks, when it comes to finding your tone, really take your time, have fun with it, experiment with it. If you have buddies, ask to borrow their pedals, man. Get together on a day and have a pedal swap with like three guys and just hang out, jam out, you know, be like, hey, I want to try your Digitech Bad Monkey and you want to try my delay. So let's take them off our boards and swap, you know, and that's how you find what you're looking for. That's how you find the sound you're looking for. Because it could sound great in this dude's hands, but once you get it into your style of playing, it may not actually work. You know? Like, you'd think a ring modulator would sound great with everything. I love them. But, nope, it doesn't. So, really take your time. Learn to appreciate the time that you take crafting your sound and finding the gear to make your sound. When it comes to amplifiers, don't just go out and buy the first amp. Take your time. Go to different places. Try different things. Bring your guitar to the store. Good God.
Yeah.
If you have a guitar that you play 80% of the time, bring that into the store.
Yeah.
And if you go, hey, what, do you need guitar work? You go, no, I'm buying an amp. They'll go, great, you need a cable? They will be okay with you bringing your guitar in to try out amps. And, you know, yeah. So, and even vice versa most of the time. If you're trying to find a guitar and you like your amp, most of the time they'll be okay, as long as it's not like some half stack or something that you're having to like have two people push in, you know. They'll be all right with you bringing your small 50-watt suitcase amp and try out some guitars in the room, because that's the amp that you play through. So check out your options, folks. See what's out there. There's so much out there nowadays. And on that note, while you're checking out what's out there, make sure to stop on by the industry news section of Talking Sound. We have all kinds of feeds from major manufacturers, audio, video, all the new stuff from Sony comes out there, all the new stuff from Canon. We have quite a few things from Rupert Neve that posts there, stuff like that. There's also a fantastic freelance AV directory. Check out the freelance AV directory. If you are an AV engineer like Matt and myself, I am a freelancer. He actually works full-time for a company, but I'm a freelancer, and it's tough sometimes finding things. So if you go onto the freelance AV page in a different state and you know of a company that hires freelancers, let me know. I'll add it on there. It's absolutely free. It's a service so that all of us can help each other find work across the industry, folks. So check out the freelance AV section. It's an interactive map of the United States. You pick your region. It comes up with the states, shows the cities. You click on the city, and there's the list of companies. Takes you right to their hire page. So no excuses for not finding gigs, guys. There it is if you're an audio engineer. There are sound companies if you're a lighting guy. There are lighting companies. It's all right there in front of you. And while you're there, please make sure to check out the other episodes. Make sure to comment on stuff. Check out the articles, everything else. Matt, I can't thank you enough after a long day of work like what we had today, pushing around this friggin' hotel, for coming on the show, man. Finally.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And hey, everybody, once again, welcome to season 3 of Talking Sound. I am Chris Jordan, your host. This has been Matt McPeak. And until next time, take care. Keep reaching for 11. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.